Hello, this is the Overtones Podcast, a show about the beauty of diversity within Christianity today. I'm Joe, and I'm a church worker.
I'm Christy, and I'm a church historian.
And I'm Lorraine, and I'm a Christian teacher. On our show, we talk to academics, professionals, and full-time church workers to explore lesser-heard voices that are shaping the church today.
Listen with us, and this season we'll explore how Puritans coped with same-sex attraction in 17th century America, how Taiwanese evangelical preaching addressed the presidential election in 2024, the unique challenges to evangelism facing Korean city churches, the changing perception and pastoral support for single women in the UK, and more. Happy New Year, guys. We're in 2024 now, and I was just scrolling through my Instagram as I do in the new year, and came across a post from one of my friends. She'd taken a picture of in a supermarket, and it was a picture of mini eggs and Easter eggs and lots of other things. And just remember, this is January, and I'm already a person who, when I get to November and I start seeing all the Christmas stuff, well, really, the Christmas stuff starts in September, really.
August.
I get annoyed.
Right.
But there's Easter eggs and mini eggs and everything like that. Right, like it was January 1st, I think, or January 2nd when I saw this.
Yeah.
And her caption was, "Dude, Jesus only just been born. Leave him alone for a sec." I just loved the kind of humour and everything. Mm. But it is just kind of, this is 3 months or three, 4 months before, no, 3 months before Easter. And supermarkets are just using Easter to, I guess, earn a bit more money, kind of sell things. And I was just reflecting on how Easter and Christmas and lots of other things have just been these events during the year that the Christians celebrate. It's just become quite commercialized and trivialized. Mm. And it's just about Easter eggs, or it's just about the Easter bunny. But yeah, dude, Jesus has only just been born. Leave him alone for a sec. Like, people know what what Easter's about and what Christmas is about, but maybe they don't.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Welcome, everybody. Today we're talking about Easter, as you can tell. This is our special Easter episode. Okay, guys, so what's your favorite part of Easter? It can be serious or light, whatever you prefer.
Christy, you go first.
I go first. Okay, my mind is completely blank. So growing up in Taiwan, let's just put it very clearly that after Christmas, it is Lunar New Year.
Of course. Mm.
So you have Christmas, you have all the kind of Christmas music in department stores. And right after Christmas, on the 26th of December, we switch to, well, maybe not right now, maybe not right away, but very quickly, we turn to Lunar New Year. So now if you walk around into kind of public areas, you have all the Lunar New Year stuff. Easter, we tend to forget about.
Oh, no.
And not in churches, but
sure,
it's definitely not as big as Christmas. It is more like a weekend thing. So I didn't have the privilege growing up anticipating Easter.
Oh.
One thing that's a bit kind of secular, which is very similar to what Joe has just said, is I remember going to like a daycare and somehow we need to find those chocolate eggs. I was very excited. and for quite a while, that's what Easter was about. Joe, your turn.
I think probably the same, kind of minus the Lunar New Year because I grew up in the UK, but I think when people think of Easter, probably go Easter bunny, chocolate eggs, Easter eggs, that kind of stuff. Yeah, I think I definitely remember going on lots of Easter egg hunts when I was younger, going to church on Friday, well, Good Friday and then Easter Sunday. It was often an excuse to see family, not for us, probably just because extended family lived in Korea. It was just us. But lots of times my friends would be seeing their extended family. But I think my favorite bit of Easter actually is something that I haven't yet done, which is there's this service at church called An Hour at the Cross on Good Friday, and my fiance raves about it each year, and I have missed it every single year because I've been busy or doing something, and I'm gonna miss it this year as well because I'll be on a plane. But it's basically an hour, two till 3 p.m it's an hour to reflect on the cross with songs, with prayer, and I kind of really have a chance to really kind of sit down and reflect on the pain that Jesus endured, knowing what he would achieve. I just think it's a really beautiful service, and we don't get to, at least for me, I don't get to do that very often with other people. So although kind of Good Friday service, it's with lots of other people and with kids and everything, I think this kind of service, yeah, I'm still looking forward to it. I'm going to have to wait another year and a bit. But yeah, that's, I think, probably my favourite bit of Easter, reflecting on the cross. What about you, Larry?
Yeah, I think my experience of Easter has changed so much. You know, as a child, we did eggs and dyed them in dye and everything, and that was really exciting. And we made kind of the empty tomb rolls, where you'd put marshmallows inside a biscuit or a roll.
You made empty tombs. That's nice.
No, like you'd make a... We have this thing in America called crescent rolls, which are like cheap croissants.
Yeah.
And you'd roll them up with marshmallows inside. And so then when you bake them, the marshmallow basically dissolves and disappears.
Oh, wow.
And so you kind of open it up and it's like the empty tomb. That was always really exciting.
That is so Christian.
So practical, yeah.
But now I think I love the whole experience of Holy Week and kind of taking more time. Because I think as a child, it was kind of just Easter, like just that Sunday, and maybe like the day before when you do these crafty things. But having the full week to be thinking about all that Jesus went through, all that he said, all that he taught, all that he prayed, all that he was anticipating across that week is just such a beautiful time to kind of slow down and reflect. I love going to Maundy Thursday meals at church when they're offered, Good Friday service, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then I feel like, it's not quite the right word, but I feel like you earn the joy of Easter when you kind of go through everything that comes before. And earn is not the word I'm looking for, but it's ironically very much opposite. But the joy, I don't know, it just means a lot more to me now when we've kind of walked through that whole week leading up to it.
Yeah, maybe not earn, but you certainly know what you mean in terms of the hard work you put in anticipating Easter Sunday and the meditations you did.
It takes on so much more meaning, which is quite ironic given the fact that for the ancient Christians, the earliest Christians, there wasn't a one-off celebration of Easter. If I can put my kind of ancient hat on for a second as a Latin teacher, you know, in thinking about this episode and thinking about how Easter celebrations have developed over the centuries, the earliest Christians, I think it's really important to remember, every Sunday was Easter. This is why we moved from celebrating the Sabbath on the Saturday to getting together on the Lord's Day, the Sunday, the day that Jesus was raised.
Wow, okay.
So I think there's a really important sense, of course, having this special Holy Week and time to celebrate Easter as a one-off thing in the year. I think it's also really crucial that we remember that every Sunday is Easter in many ways. And that the resurrection should be permeating our Christian life, not just weekly, but on a daily basis. And it shouldn't just be something that we're celebrating once a year.
That's very true. And that reminds me of the fact that Puritans wanted to ban Easter. And one of the reasons that they gave was, why are we having so many holy days on our liturgical calendar? Are these things not just superstition? They actually used the word superstition to describe Christmas and Easter. Yeah, and they have been wanting to do away with these so-called holy days. And they finally managed to do so in, I think, 1647.
Wow.
And by the time they banned Christmas and Easter, people were really unhappy. I mean, people still remember Puritans doing that. Puritans are those boring people who wanted to cancel Christmas.
Yes, that's right. That's basically what you hear about them. That's so interesting. Tell us more.
And there were riots during Christmas season, because people wanted their Christmas back. And it was obviously eventually restored after Puritans lost power in 1660. But they believed that these so-called holy days are not, strictly speaking, biblical. And like Larry has said, only Sundays, as the Bible teaches, are holy. And these are the holy days. And Puritans are also, because of this reason, known for their stricter observation of the Sabbath.
That's so interesting. So, Christy, say a little bit more about why the Puritans had such an issue with these special holy days.
I would say it was part of their Reformation thinking. So from 16th century all the way to 17th century, Puritans were thinking, you know, how can I reform the Church of England to make it less Roman church-like and more maybe Geneva-like, maybe more reformed, maybe more aligned with what the Bible teaches. And one way of their thinking is to look at the Bible and to look at the traditions that are left to them from the medieval times and to see, you know, what are the things that are not really explicitly taught in the Bible. And they found out, you know what, take a look at this. Christmas, Easter, these are the things that the Bible has taught. And these are the things that the Roman church has taught us. Hence, superstition. And for us to reform our church, and we all know about the Reformation from Martin Luther to John Calvin, and Puritans, you know, in particular, look to Zwingli, look to Calvin, they're definitely more Calvin, and his Geneva model as the reformed church. And part of that reformation that they are pursuing is to do away with these so-called holy days that for them just sound papist, sounds Roman Catholic.
Okay, so the big concern there was not being Roman Catholic. But I think that interestingly links with the fact that a lot of people today think that Easter was originally a pagan holiday. So I guess in the zeitgeist there isn't as much concern with being papist, but a lot of people think that Christian Easter originated as a pagan festival for the spring equinox, right? And that the Christians kind of wanted to take this over and make some sort of connection with what the pagans were already doing in celebrating kind of new life and dawn and spring and all of that. And it sounds very tidy and like a good story, but actually it's quite interesting. Even if you just look at Encyclopedia Britannica, I just have one sentence here from them that I thought was very clear. They say, given the determination with which Christians combated all forms of paganism, this appears a rather dubious presumption. And I think they're right that even though it's quite a popular narrative of the story of Easter, actually it's probably very unlikely. And often people connect this to the name of Easter, that if you go all the way back to the Venerable Bede, the 8th century monk who did a lot of writing about early church history, he suggested that Easter came from the Anglo-Saxon Eastre, the goddess of spring and fertility. So I think that lends a lot of credence to this idea. But actually, there are a number of other possible explanations for the name that reflect what I think is true, that it's much more kind of purely Christian background. Especially, some of them are a bit complicated in terms of the linguistic history, but with the earliest celebrations of Easter that we know of, the original Latin name for the week of Easter was White Week, Hebdomina Alba, and that word Alba, when translated into ancient German, becomes Ostern, which is where we get Easter from, essentially.
Very cool.
So I think the connection with the white robes that were worn at Easter by the baptismal applicants is much more likely as where the name came from.
Very interesting. We have very often think of Christmas as white. But you're saying that from a kind of more of a kind of historical point of view, it is Easter that is white.
Yes, that is ironic.
And not just white, but like kind of sacramentally white.
Yes.
Talk about the robes. And even in kind of early modern times, I would say Easter was very much sacramental.
Oh, yeah.
Because although today we very often kind of celebrate the Lord's Supper regularly, I would say maybe like once a month, once every 2 months, once every, I don't know, 1 to 2 months. And there are churches who celebrate the Lord's Supper even more frequently, like every week. But back in 16th, 17th century, if you strictly observe the rules, the canons, then ideally you receive the Lord's Supper around 3 times a year. But in practice, very often people only go to church to receive the Lord's Supper once a year. And that will be the Easter Sunday. At least the Easter tide, the Easter season. And that would be the one time of the year that people would dress up. People will become a little bit more well-behaved. People will be a bit more sensitive to their sins. And they will want to be a bit almost cleaner, a bit purer in behavior. Because that's the day, that's the time they're going to receive the communion. So it was a big deal. It was that one time of the year that you do that's almost like the climax of the year, and the church will be packed.
Right.
It'll be very noisy, very crowded, And in terms of attendance, what we see is that Easter was the time that the church was filled with people more so than Christmas, because that's the time when people want to attend a communion service. And in larger parishes, you can see celebrations beginning a few weeks before Easter Sunday and going all the way to a few weeks after, with 10, 15 communion services, just so that they can accommodate the amount of parishioners who want to come in that particular time to receive the Lord's Supper.
That's crazy, just to think, like, loads of people coming for the Lord's Supper to be reminded of what Jesus has done. I think that's so cool.
Yeah, and the fact that it is so rarely done in church almost makes it even more important, even more sacred.
Yes.
I think we've lost that. I think communion has become so common in most of our churches today that it is just, oh, it's communion Sunday again. Oh, a few weeks later, it's communion Sunday again. We hopefully still respect it as something very important. We still prepare our hearts before we go to church, knowing that that was the day that we are going to receive the Lord's Supper. But I wonder whether we treat it as seriously as people back in the day. And the fact that there's a difference in frequency, I think, contributes to the way we view the sacrament.
Definitely. I can speak a little bit from experience. The church that I grew up in only had communion on Easter Sunday. And
really? I've never heard of that before.
Yes, which I think is quite unusual nowadays.
Very unusual.
Yes.
Have you heard of anyone else who's had this? I don't think I've ever heard of it.
I'm not sure.
Not me.
But actually, all the little elements you were talking about, like when I was really little, we would wear little hats on Easter Sunday as little girls, and it was the first time in the year that you could wear white, which I think is a traditional fashion thing that, you know, you wear white after Easter. But anyway, but it was still connected in this kind of dressing up for it. And I think from my church, their perspective, they're very kind of concerned about ritualism and not wanting to perform a ritual too often in a sense that might make it seem salvific.
Oh, okay.
You know, on its own.
That's very Protestant.
Yeah, very Protestant, yes. But I think there's also an irony there in that when you only take communion once a year on Easter Sunday, it takes on this very, at least for me, very kind of mysterious sort of sense that not completely sure what it means. It's just something very special that we do on a very special day.
That's fascinating. Just to kind of go back to that, because Puritans, interestingly, went the other way. So they were like, okay, these holy days we need to abolish.
Right.
And every Sunday is holy days. So what we're going to do is that we're going to have, actually, if you know the gospel, if we teach the gospel well enough and the parishioners know what we're talking about, we ought to have communion Sundays more often. And preaching, obviously, for Puritans was the center of a service. But they did start to develop more frequent communion. So going to 17th century, you have Puritan parishes that celebrate the Lord's Supper a lot more often. Monthly communion became more of a trend.
Right.
Going to 17th century, especially in London. And we know that London was a lot more exposed to Puritanism as well.
Interesting. I do think, like you say, now maybe we've kind of come to the opposite end of that. And when we do have it so regularly, it can lose a bit of its solemnity. And I know there's a lot of debate among ministers, even at my own church, kind of like, how much should this be a very solemn thing? How much should it be a joyful, a celebratory thing? And my current church, you know, invites the children to come up with the families, not to take communion, but just to come as a family to receive a blessing. And it could be very noisy and the children running around a little bit. And some people feel, oh, that's not capturing the solemnity as it should. But others, well, this is a celebration.
I think there's so many pros to doing it different ways. So I was a choral scholar when I was an undergrad. So I sang fairly high church, Anglo-Catholic chapel regularly, but also I went to my kind of church that I went to on Sundays, which is quite evangelical. And so I always got a contrast.
Right.
And I found both of them really helpful because in a way, both are true, right?
Yes.
When we have that kind of solemnity and this is absolutely massive what the Lord Jesus Christ has done on the cross, there is this kind of reverence and awe, that a right reverence and awe and fear that I should have as I go up to receive the bread and the wine. But also, the work that Jesus has done on the cross gives me freedom and joy that I can celebrate what I'm being reminded of. It wasn't that Jesus just died, right. he did rise and he ascended. And I guess we often forget the full picture of that.
Yes.
We try and kind of focus in on one part at a time. And obviously it is difficult to kind of practically do that in a service. You can't, probably quite difficult to have both styles in one. So maybe we should be flexible.
Mm.
Maybe we should have one communion service which is more solemn and more evoking that kind of reverent fear and awe of Jesus. But also maybe we should have some services where we're more kind of celebrating and being more joyful that Jesus did die for us.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. We seem to be quite rigid about those things.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
Yeah, I agree. I think in terms of diversity and unity, it's a big question. I think it is always helpful to look at our own congregation, especially for church leaders. There are always times where we can reflect on our own culture and the style and the personality almost of our congregation and to see these are things that we do really well. We might be very good at maybe bringing the family, bringing in our kids, and that there's a great joy and a lot of positives in doing that. And at the same time, maybe we are not as good in terms of being a bit more intentional in reflecting quietly on the gospel truths, on Christ's sacrifice on the cross and his resurrection. I think that's definitely a personal story for me. Growing up, it is easier to speak, easier to pray and to say what I want to say, easier to teach, easier to be taught. There's a lot of kind of word-based way of worship and style of piety, less meditations, less quietness. And I've definitely found it very helpful, not just during Easter celebrations or just in my kind of day-to-day quiet time, to spend time not to speak, not to pray, but to maybe just meditate on a verse, meditate on a picture of Christ, not the real picture, but kind of a mental picture of Christ on the cross and what it means to me. That has certainly been very helpful. And for different people, for different churches, there will be pros and cons when it comes to what we are accustomed to and what other things that we can maybe try out. So what are the different ways of remembering what Christ has done for us?
Yeah.
Well, I wonder, just to finish off, there's a song that I absolutely love singing all the way through the year, but especially at Easter. It's called Jerusalem, not the British one, but the City of Light one. I wonder if I just finish by reading the lyrics out.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
And just reflecting on the words.
That'd be great.
Here's Jerusalem by City of Light. See him in Jerusalem, walking where the crowds are. Once these streets had sung to him, now they cry for murder. Such a frail and lonely man holding up the heavy cross. See him walking in Jerusalem, on the road to save us. See him there upon the hill. Hear the scorn and laughter. Silent as a lamb he waits, praying to the Father. See the King who made the sun and the moon and shining stars. Let the soldiers hold and nail him down so that he could save them. See him there upon the cross, now no longer breathing. Dust that formed the watching crowds takes the blood of Jesus. Feel the earth is shaking now. See the veil is split in two. And he stood before the wrath of God, shielding sinners with his blood. See the empty tomb today. Death could not contain him. Once the servant of the world, now in victory reigning. Lift your voices to the one who is seated on the throne. See him in the new Jerusalem. Praise the one who saved us.
Amen.
Well, a happy Easter to you. I hope that this Easter time, eventually you can praise the one who saved us and look forward to seeing him in the new Jerusalem. Happy Easter. Mm-hmm.